Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. For months, we've watched on the sidelines. Wrong script. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's time for our weekly reporters roundtable. Joining us today is Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch. Jim, really, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good morning.
Happy Monday.
Exactly. Jackie Borchardt of the Northeast Ohio Media Group. Jackie, thank you for not laughing.
I'm glad to be here.
All right. And Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Nice to be here.
Okay. Reconnoitering now. Issue one on the November 3 ballot. It isn't getting a lot of attention in terms of funding or media coverage, but there is a lot of backing for it. And I guess I was kind of wondering if it could die of neglect. But Jim Siegel, could you kick us off with how much money have they raised for this, for issue one?
A little over $250,000, okay. Which isn't much, obviously, in this day and age when you're trying to run a statewide campaign.
Right.
The official campaign's done a mailer. They're doing some radio, but they have not brought in a whole lot of money. What's kind of interesting is that the largest contributor is actually the payday lending industry to the campaign. And issue one, by the way, is the redistricting reform issue. They're changing. They want to change the way that legislative districts are drawn every 10 years, make it a little more of a bipartisan process, put in some new rules, try to make it so that the maps are fairer and provide some more competition. But yeah, they've. You know, there is a concern that there's, you know, they could kind of get lost in the shuffle with the marijuana issues taking up all the time and attention. But some nonprofit groups have picked up the slack a little bit where the campaign has not done a whole lot. Then they've managed to get out the word, and the League of Women Voters, Common Cause Ohio, among others, have been working this issue very hard, getting endorsements. And so there's no organized opposition. So. If it does fail, it'll be because of, just like you said,
neglect
and just some confusion, I guess.
So, okay, issue one, if passed, would establish a 7-member commission, governor, auditor, secretary of state, and 4 legislative appointees to approve House and Senate district maps drawn under a new set of criteria. It would be a 10-year map that would require support from at least 2 minority party members to pass. Otherwise, it would be redrawn in 4 years. What's the penalty of the 4 years, Julie Carr-Smythe? What difference does that make?
Well, what that does is essentially says you cannot you have to revisit the process, because one of the problems we have is that we get a map in and then it's in for a full decade. And so whether you like it or not, there's no really a reopener clause to it. So this way they're saying, well, we'll put a very temporary map in until you guys can negotiate something that is agreeable to both parties, because the 2 Democratic vote requirement means that, you have to come up with that kind of a majority. You have to have, I guess, what would be 5 of the 7 as opposed to just 4 of the 7, and 2 of those have to be Democrats. So,
or whoever the minority party happens to be.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thought here is that lawmakers don't like uncertainty. And if you require them to redraw the map in 4 years, that's a level of uncertainty that they don't want to see. So that will help bring them together and pass a bipartisan map.
And from a campaign perspective, they don't want to have new districts and new voters, in 4 years. They would like to Jim's point about certainty. It's expensive to run campaigns, and if you're then having to change gears to a different district. And there's also the idea that in 4 years, you will have gone through 2 elections for House districts and 1 for the Senate, that those people who had been appointed to the board before could be voted out of office. And you could have a different party be the majority party.
So let's go back to the payday lending issue. By the way, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It's our weekly reporters roundtable. We're talking about issue one right now that would change how we draw legislative Senate and House lines in the state of Ohio. If you have a question or comment about that, give us a call now. 1-866-897. I'm sorry. It's 614-292-8513. I'm coming down off the membership drive, folks. That's all I can say. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I knew I would do that. So what is the payday lending thing here, Jim Siegel?
Well, look, but the Republicans and Democrats have tried to come together and run this issue one campaign. It was a bipartisan resolution that passed. The two uh, the you know, there's co-chairmen, one Republican, one Democrat. And there's, from what I understand, there was some agreements as to who would raise, you know, money and how much, and both sides were supposed to raise a certain amount. I don't really know which side is getting credit for the payday lending money, but it's $100,000. And some might say, well, why would they jump in on a legislative redistricting race?
Right.
Well, if it's an issue that both parties support, and the payday lending industry likes to have friends in both parties. I mean, there's really, I don't think anything more complicated than that. They're trying to keep and maybe pick up a few political friends, and so this is where they've decided to put their money.
It's a pretty non-controversial place for them to put their money if they're trying to, mm-hmm. like Jim said, gain support across the aisle and in both chambers. Because as we've seen, even you know, issue two still did not have such broad support as issue one in the state house.
How well do voters understand the proposal that would change how the lines are redrawn, Julie Carr-Smith?
I would venture to say most Ohio voters don't even know there's an election coming up in November 3rd. It's an off year.
Yeah.
It's what we're hearing is it's very difficult for them even to, like I say, especially with the noise around 2016 already. We had Rob Portman out this past weekend starting his campaign, essentially his grassroots campaign for U.S. Senate in 2016. We have presidential debates going on for 2016. And even internally, we have to distinguish, you know, at the AP as we're making election coverage. Oh, yeah. This year's election, not next year's, because mm-hmm. people's heads are already in 2016. So I would say that there's a lot of not even misinformation, but just lack of knowledge that this is coming up, as much as we in the press try to keep them informed.
Our lifeblood. Yep, Jim Siegel.
Well, I think issue one is helped by the fact that the ballot language is pretty favorable to the issue. I think it does a pretty good job explaining it pretty quickly and does it in a favorable way. So if you're going in not really knowing what issue one is, after you read that ballot language, I don't think you're going to come away with a negative feeling about the issue. And also having so many groups on board, including the two state political parties, I think will be very helpful when it comes right down to it. There may not be a lot of Ohioans who can explain to you what issue one is, but a lot of folks will be getting slate cards mailed to them and it'll include vote yes on issue one on those slate cards for the Republicans and Democrats, and that'll help.
Everyone from League of Women Voters on down. I mean, Common Cause, you name it.
Right. There hasn't been much negative, really any.
I think I saw one endorsement against issue one last week from the Ohio Roundtable, which is the conservative group that has strongly opposed the casino initiative in 2009. And, mm-hmm. and they're opposed to all the state issues because they say that the Constitution isn't really as permanent and guiding as it should be in this day and age. Because following the casino initiative, you had now we have racinos and expansion of gambling, and they mm-hmm. believe that anything that's going to be written in the Constitution, the governor and lawmakers can just kind of work around it. But that's the only opposition I've heard.
Except issue one, you have to change the Constitution in order to change this process.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah.
No, they're just saying
on principle. Then
on principle, yeah. We shouldn't be changing
They'd
this. Considering
wait for the Constitutional Modernization Commission to come up with something is what they're saying.
No,
okay, they're not even into that.
I think they're just saying, you know,
they're just
right
being
now.
Contrarians,
oh
okay.
Yeah, and politically, you know, the Supreme Court they take issue with the fact that the Supreme Court has ruled that they don't have standing to challenge some of these parts in the Constitution, and you know, if they can't, then who can?
So. Okay. Well, you know, let's speaking of issues on the ballot, voters in less than a month, voters will decide for the first time whether or not to legalize marijuana in Ohio for both recreational and medicinal use. That's issue three on the ballot. Voters also will decide issue two, which was generated by the Ohio General Assembly, largely to stymie passage of issue three by banning the creation of monopolies in the state constitution. The legislature, the Ohio General Assembly, has gotten the religion about the issue of monopolies after passing or after letting voters approve the issue. A few years back to legalize casinos in Ohio in a monopolistic fashion.
Right.
So.
Right. So this is was initiated by them. I think the whole process took about 10 days and it was drafted.
It's the fastest thing they've done in a long time.
Right. And obviously the entire campaign built against issue three has really focused heavily on this monopoly question. There are 10 exclusive growing sites built into that, and the private investors who are underwriting that campaign have a personal interest in that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I had just done a story on this over the weekend that, you know, it resonates a lot with that independent-minded Ohio voter who doesn't like the word monopoly. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we still have monopolies. We have utilities and other things, but right. We've always tried to deregulate those and with limited success. But still, it's an easy hot button among independent-minded voters.
It's a lot like how, say, liquor is controlled in the state of Ohio, though, isn't it?
That's right. Not unlike that at all, because the growing sites are limited. And also within Issue 3, there is an option to add additional growing sites down the road. So it's not entirely just the first 10. But then retailers, there would be quite a network of retail establishments. And there are some legal issues around those too, I guess, whether or not you could get a small business loan for something like that is highly in question, because marijuana is not legal at the federal level, right? So the retailers would be much more spread out than these growing sites.
1-8. I'm sorry. Before I move on, I'm just keep reciting the number for a membership drive. Maybe I should just take a moment to thank everyone for supporting 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher, and apologize in advance for repeating that number again and again. I hope not beyond this moment, but I'm sorry about that. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation. We're talking about what's on the ballot in November and more. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dennis in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. My question is that the legislature has a habit of not following the Constitution, as highlighted by the DeRolf decision, which declared that the legislature should fund schools equally. And, you know, how do we know that they will abide by constitutional amendments since they've ignored it before?
Actually, it's an interesting question. The issue three, really, probably all of these issues, but definitely issue three, will have to have pretty significant implementing legislation. And I know that the campaign, because I read their prospectus, were saying that they have set aside money to help usher that legislation through. So presumably if that passed, then it would also be in Ohio law, gives you a little more certainty that the legislators would follow it.
That's an interesting question. Who says they have to do anything?
I think that was the point of the Conservative Ohio Roundtable's opposition, is that, you know, in their view, and DeRolf is a great example. They were using the casino initiative and the fact that after that passed, now we have slot-like machines at racinos, which were not part of that initiative. That was a deal brokered by the administration afterward. And I think that, you know, if issue three does pass, like Julie said, it requires a lot of heavy lifting from legislators to actually implement it. And there are some hard deadlines in the amendment language saying, you know, these things need to be in place by a certain date. But I think we can expect to see, you know, the legislature really dragging their heels on doing some of that.
Okay, Dennis, thanks for that call. And Don in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Don.
I was just wondering, under the marijuana initiative, what the state would tax the private growers that grow the four mature plants.
Okay, do you mean the individual growers?
Right, the ones that have their own product.
Right, isn't it just for personal use, so it wouldn't be taxed?
Right.
There might be a fee for
There's an application / registration fee. I think it's annual, and they've put it at about, I think, $50. I mean, that's all to be decided still by a new commission that the amendment would create. But only the commercial marijuana would be taxed. The stuff that you grow at home, the four plants, that could only be for personal use at home. You can't even transport it out of your home.
Okay.
I thought you could also, you could share that in a limited amount without it being a misdemeanor or felony.
Yeah. Yeah, you could, you can share it, but it specifically does not include the word transport. So, I mean, and other states have similar language too. Colorado, I believe you can share, but you can't actually take it out of your house to share it with a friend. It's got to be shared there.
And I think that's one thing people don't necessarily understand about this. They hear legalization. Most people, or many people, think that it's medical marijuana because we now have that in 23 states, I think. And so that's obviously controlled and given out with a license for medical purposes. But for the recreational, it's kind of a different animal. And here you'd be able to grow some privately that without taxing it because you're just using it yourself.
All right, Don, thanks for that call. We will return with our weekly reporters roundtable in just a moment. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. Still with us for the Weekly Reporters Roundtable, Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press, Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, and Jackie Borchardt of the Northeast Ohio Media Group. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's turn to the Kasich campaign and talk about what's going on there. It's kind of reaching sort of it's a little bit of a downturn here. New Hampshire, where he was one of the top, well, he was in the top three, I think. He's now dipped down to seventh or something like that. His fundraising didn't do very well in New Hampshire, despite his, you know, where he spent most of his time and money so far. Was this predictable, Julie Carr-Smythe?
I think they would say not. Their super PAC did send a big force, ground force, into New Hampshire last week. I think that he's still hoping.
This is New Day America, right?
Right. He's still hoping that, you know, any kind of a showing there would keep his campaign alive. But with a field this big, it's very difficult to show yourself. You know, we have another debate coming up tomorrow, right? And he'll have to make some real splash there, I would say, to distinguish himself and pull out of the pack.
Well, I think the campaign is hopeful that the debate tomorrow will better showcase them than the last one. With the last one, it featured a lot of, you know, CNN saying, hey, you know, candidate one, the candidate two said this about you. What do you think? And it was a lot of that just went over and over and over.
And no
again.
One ever said anything about him.
Well, that and that's really not his game. That's not what he excels in. That's okay. What others, gotcha. Others excel in. And so, you know, as the guy who's trying to portray himself as the adult in the room, that's not a debate format for him. He thinks that once I think tomorrow they think they can get more traction out of a debate where they're going to be able to talk a little more policy and maybe not so much about confrontation.
You know, I've noticed he's trash-talking Hillary Clinton, though, a little bit more than he has been. Is that just my imagination?
I haven't picked up on that, but...
Okay.
Well, I think, you know, the Democrats had their debate. I think, you know, news media-wise, you know, she's more in the news right now. And
right.
I think those questions, you know, come up naturally. And it's a much safer bet for him to bash Hillary than it is, I think, any of his opponents in the Republican side of things, because that keeps in time with his, as Jim said, being the adult in the room,
mm-hmm.
And looking forward to a general election, not just focused completely on winning the primary.
Well, what's one probably the most significant for John Kasich is Jeb Bush's campaign is not doing well at all.
Yeah.
And if you look at them, they're essentially, you know, they're establishment candidates. They're roughly the same age. They're the same race. They're the same gender. So to have them both in the race and to have them even as a ticket probably isn't workable for the Republicans. So, you know, it gives him a little bit of hope, I guess, if they decide that Bush isn't really going to make it as a front runner, because there's still, I think, a philosophy, one theory out there that the interceders, you know, the Trumps and the Carsons are not going to really be there for the long haul one way or another. I saw in this weekend's news coverage that the elder Bush is talking about how this has shades of Ross Perot and how it really hurt him when he lost his second election. And so, you know, Ross Perot obviously didn't become the candidate, but even in just a three-person race, he had a real impact.
Well, yeah, I mean, but the thing is that Trump and Carson Carson now in Iowa, they just keep getting stronger. They and Trump take credit for it at this point. I mean, is that what the game is all about? Is out hanging in there until Trump finally does what?
Well, I think they need to start. They need to hope that Republicans start coalescing around somebody other than Trump. Right now there's just so many candidates dividing up the non-Trump vote, including Ben Carson. And look, Carson's now ahead in Iowa.
Exactly.
But if I'm the Kasich campaign, I'm paying no attention to that in Iowa. I mean, look, Iowa has notoriously Republican primaries have notoriously picked, you know, Pat Robertson's mm-hmm. and others who have no
yeah.
shot of, mm-hmm. of winning, and they end up fading fast afterwards. So I wouldn't worry too much about that if I was their campaign. They're probably not. But he does need to show up and put in a strong performance in New Hampshire to give him some kind of a bounce going forward. I don't know. I mean, right now, it looks like Trump has the lasting power at the moment. He's held on a lot longer than anyone thought, and I don't see him fading away anytime soon.
I feel like the GOP at some larger level has to cut some deals here. They have to narrow the field themselves, and they have to figure out who they really want to win, and they have to put that person up against Trump in a way that's meaningful so that then they're having a real primary. Right now, it's just a sort of a cacophony of voices. Voters don't even know who probably 8 of the 12 even are. They probably couldn't name them if you did a man on the street poll. Mm-hmm. So I think the party itself has to make some decisions.
Hmm. Significance of the fact that John Kasich raised most of his money from Ohio. It wasn't surprising to me necessarily.
Well, that's interesting. When Ken Blackwell ran for governor, a lot of his money was from all over the country.
And that's been the case in other gubernatorial races.
Right. And yeah. I think that to some extent, it wasn't good for Kasich that is what his campaign showed, because he's already running very strong in Ohio. Polls are showing him doing well in Ohio. And clearly it's his home. So, he needs to be branching out and showing somebody somewhere that, okay, you know, the people in California or the deep pockets in Texas or Michigan or wherever are behind me.
Right.
Well, and that report was really since he began his campaign. So
right.
I wasn't surprised to see most of the money being from Ohio, in that was kind of his initial, entrance to the, mm-hmm. the campaign. And I think now kind of the period we're in now is where to watch to see if he expands that outside of Ohio.
Hmm. Right, because there's only so much money in Ohio to give. I mean, that has probably got to start be running dry for him at this point.
Until the next step.
Right. So
yeah.
I got to think that he's got to, if he doesn't expand his base pretty significantly beyond Ohio, then he's going to run out of money.
Yeah, Carl Lindner, who was probably the most generous Republican donor in the United States, who's from Cincinnati, mm-hmm. has died in the last election cycle, in maybe the last 2 or 3 mm-hmm. years. And so, you know, that money's gone. And so you look at how much money can be raised here, and it's, not as much as it used to be.
The Bush campaign is paring down, cutting costs, that kind of a thing. Is this the beginning of the end for the Bush campaign? I mean, any predictions on that score?
Well, it's not good, but I like to remind people that John McCain's campaign had a lot of these kind of troubles around this similar time of during the election, the year that he won the nomination. So everyone was counting him out as he was having to change up campaign folks. It didn't look good. He looked like he was in disarray, and he pulled it out. Now this may be a different year with different, you know, he didn't have a Donald Trump to run against at that point, but But I wouldn't count out Bush yet. I did find it. I know he was really getting – Bush was really getting criticized for something he said this weekend about at some kind of forum where he was concerned about the tone and the rhetoric of the campaign and that he didn't want to just run, you know, if it's just going to be gridlock. And he said something like, I've got better things to do if that's the way this is going to go. And a lot of that kind of raised some eyebrows among some who thought, you know, is he just trying to take his ball and go home? And so that – I don't know. I don't know where that leads them, but it didn't get a lot of good coverage, at least what I was listening to this morning.
Yeah, it seems like the electorate wants to continue to hear candidates say there's nothing more I'd rather be than going through this living hell of running for president of the United States at the primary level as a Republican.
Right. Well, and Bush had a big enough campaign that he can, you know, pare it back now.
Yeah.
Where you've seen the Kasich folks really have said from, and they've said from the beginning that their focus is on New Hampshire. And, you know, if he doesn't show well there, then they're going to take their ball and go home.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Coming up, we are going to be hearing from John Stauff. He is president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. They have a question on the ballot as well. So if you have questions for him, you can get queued up now, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. How could we forget the zoo campaign? You all lived here. You all at least saw it on a ballot when you did vote, if you vote. I assume you all do. Not everybody does. They've changed tack. They're going the way they've always gone, which is just a renewal, just kind of maintaining what they've had for years now. It's a very, very big difference in tone. But, you know, there are a lot more people that woke, you know, that were made much more sensitive to the issue of the zoo. Any thoughts about how the Columbus Zoo issue might fare this time around?
I think it'll pass without much trouble. I think the problem with the last proposal was a levy increase, and the idea of a downtown zoo expansion turned off a lot of voters. And I think that they took the failure from that issue as a message from their voters that, you know, they're not willing to support that right now or in the coming future. So I think it's very smart of them to just, you know, go with the renewal. I've also seen I'm a zoo member, so I get all sorts of mail from them, and I've seen several, you know, fundraising pitches in the last couple months. So I'm sure your guest later can talk more about that, but you know, private contributions are still a way to fund, you know, maybe some of these projects they had hoped to do with the expansion. But I don't see it failing this time. I don't see a huge opposition either to the renewal.
Right.
Yeah. The last one had organized opposition. It was an increase. There was concern that we were, you know, the Franklin County was being asked to pay more while Delaware County, where the zoo is located, was not. Since then, I think they raised the rates on Delaware County residents and not in Franklin County. And there's really no opposition to this now, and that organized that I've seen, and renewal levies just in general have a much higher passage rate than new levies.
Mm-hmm. And the downtown issue that Jackie mentions is interesting because there's, you know, there's an argument to be made. A lot of suburban folks in Columbus don't come downtown. They don't really find that comfortable. They don't want to bring their kids down here, figure out how to park, It's been made expansively easy to park up there and to get in and out, and it's like a theme park. you know, and I think that just renewing it and keeping the zoo, I think people support the zoo, but I think there was a backlash to, you know, more money.
I think it'll be interesting to see if they support it at the same levels that they have before last year's levy. It's actually a year and a half ago now, I think. It was in May. 2014, it'll be interesting to see if the numbers have gone down or maybe even gone up because of awareness.
Also, and this being an off-year election, you just wonder, you know, with such a low turnout, you never know how that's going to impact the numbers in the end. It may make them better.
I think they're typically off-year turnout. I mean, off-year.
Well, 14 would have been a governor's
14 election. 14 for that big increase and so on.
Right.
We have an email from Ann who asks us to discuss the Franklin County mental health renewal. No new taxes levy. Issue 14 is way down the list of issues without nearly the discussion of 1, 2, and 3. But it is hugely important to all of our community. The mental health levies never fail, do they?
Especially, yeah, renewal level levies. Yeah. I'm not aware of any failing in the last last couple of years, and I've seen organized opposition to this,
right?
And I've seen a fair amount of signage across the city in support of it, as well as the zoo levy. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll pass. It may turn out maybe very small, but I think the people who make it that far down on the ballot care enough about the issue to vote for it.
Hmm. Yeah, an issue like that, if the electorate is not in a really bad mood for some reason, being some kind of scandal or some kind of a massive economic downturn, then those issues tend to pass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're barely even discussed, though. It's true. There's a lot actually on the ballot when you're getting down to number 14. You think about it. Turnout still looks like it's going to be very, very low.
Yes, and I think that is going to have a huge impact on issue 3, who does turn out. I was out at the OSU campus this week talking to their traveling van and their mascot. And, the black vote, the youth vote tends to be very depressed in off-year elections. Mm-hmm. It tends to be more white, more conservative, older. And so that could play a huge factor in how everything turns out on Election Day.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us today. Julie Carr-Smythe of the Associated Press, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And also Jackie Borchardt of the Northeast Ohio Media Group, thanks to you.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, more on that zoo levy. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. In May 2014, 70% of Franklin County voters rejected a proposed 1.25 mil property tax for the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. At the time, the zoo board said it would return with a new proposal. This time, a bare-bones renewal is on the ballot. The strongest theme from the zoo campaign is no new taxes. Joining us now, President and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium, Tom Stolf. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Now, how much effort have you put into just overcoming the bad blood over the 2014 proposal?
Well, we've talked about it quite a bit. You know, right after that election, we started our grassroots program talking to our community. We learned valuable lessons there. And as we talk about this levy, our current levy ends this December, and so it is vital for us to renew this levy, not an increase in tax. Mm-hmm. You know, we learned our lesson. You know, when mm-hmm. we talk about this levy, it is not about a new campus. It's not about downtown. It's not about another facility. It's about maintaining what we have. And it's so important that we talk about that, because from an economic engine to education to family fun, family values and quality of life in our community, that's what it's all about. And so this election, this renewal is all about keeping the zoo great. What you know about going to the zoo for years, this is what this levy is all about. And it is so vital that we're able to maintain what we have and, you know, improve what we have. You know, the zoo's been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. And there are certain areas of our zoo that we need to invest in. And that's what this levy is about, maintaining what we have.
You know, all the kind of the grandiose proposals aside from 2014, is a simple renewal enough to keep improving the zoo?
Well, we're always looking at ways other than levy taxation to maintain the zoo. And so when you talk about this, this current levy that we're talking about was set back in 1990. So it's a 0.75 mil, which, let's make it simple terms for me, it's $100,000 assessed valued home. It's $21 a year. And so that number was set back in 1990. We're asking for a renewal, and that renewal would go until 2025. So when we talk about where is the money going? It's going to a little bit to operation and the rest to capital. And so when you look at holistically at the entire zoo budget, it makes up about 14% of our operation. And so it's still extremely important. We definitely need it. But when we look at the zoo is doing everything it can to keep the costs down. We want to make sure that the zoo is for everyone. And that's what we're known for. You know, we're attracting nearly 3 million guests a year, hundreds of thousands of students going in and learning about animals. It's so important. Unfortunately, the plight of conservation, we fail in some places around the world, and that's what the Columbus Zoo is known for, is to educate and inspire people to care about wildlife and wild places.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Tom Stolfe. He's president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. They have a renewal levy on the ballot this year. It's a 10-year issue. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Before 2014, the zoo really never lost a levy request. I was wondering if voters routinely supported it in droves when they couldn't support anything else, that and the mental health issues, right? Do you find that they are thinking about it differently now? Are they more critical? More critically thinking about it.
Well, I think that it's very important that we get the information out. And as we talk about the last election back in 2014, we spent many, many months and every single day talking to individuals and explaining what this levy is about. It's not the same levy. It's not the same ask. It is a renewal of what we have, and to make sure that we keep this zoo great. And so, as we talk to our voters, they really appreciate the information that they're getting, and we're finding that many people are supporting us because they love their zoo. They just didn't want to pay higher taxes, and they didn't have enough information about the downtown facility. The reason why we were asked to go downtown is simply this, because we're the number one tourist attraction, or one of the top tourist attractions in Columbus. We serve that educational role. We have a great conservation message, and we're attractive. And that's why we were asked. And, you know, we heard loud and clear, and that day is over. We do not want to step backwards. We want to keep the zoo great, and we want to do that with no increase in tax.
Mel in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mel.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Well, my question is, why is the only Franklin County residents are paying for the zoo levy?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So it's more than just Franklin County that pays, and let me explain that. First of all, my response would be, first things first, let's maintain what we have at the zoo, and this current levy ends this December. So there's no question about it. As we look into the future, we're always looking for ways to subsidize the cost of doing business. And as we know, back in 1990, the cost of fuel, milk and bread and bananas for gorillas was a certain price, and in 2025, it's probably not going to be that same price. But we're not asking for an increase in tax. We know that the revenue can come from somewhere else. So now let's explain the Delaware County, Franklin County issue. First of all, back in 1927, and I apologize we have to go that far back, but it's important when we look holistically at this Columbus Zoo. Back in 1927 is when the zoo started, and it was the city of Columbus that started with a few reindeer after a holiday parade. And the community leaders felt that they knew Columbus was going to grow, and so they located the zoo on their property. So we're on the city of Columbus's property, as well as Franklin County's property. Now, that's located in Delaware County, but the owners of the property are Franklin County and the city of Columbus. So there's 588 acres, and out of that 588 acres, except for Zumbese Bay, we pay property tax on that for-profit organization. The rest of that is not paying property tax. So if the zoo wasn't located there, what would that land be? Well, it would be homes. It would be businesses. It would be places that are paying property taxes. So when you look holistically at Franklin County and Delaware County, there are definitely an investment there.
The point is it's foregone for Delaware County. They don't get taxes from that property.
They do not get taxes from that property. And they would. And if you look at that area with Wedgwood and Wedgwood Estates and all of that growth there,
they'd have property taxes.
There would be definitely property taxes. So then we also look back and said, you know, we appreciate Franklin County's investment. So they have deep discounts into the zoo where no other county, I don't care if you live in Union County, Delaware County, or you're a tourist, you're paying a different cost. There's a discount every single day for Franklin County voters or residents. You get half price 3 days a week. And you also get a deep discount as a member of the zoo, and we have many people that are members of their zoo because the zoo is a great attraction, and sometimes the kids get a little tired as they're traveling through the zoo, so they want to keep coming back. So it's an investment. And the thing that I love about the Columbus Zoo is when I don't care if it, whatever we want to talk about, if you want to talk about animals or if you want to talk about money, we're bringing in tourism into our area. They're staying in Franklin County. They're spending money in Franklin County. It's a great investment that we also give back. There's one more thing I forgot to mention. The students are coming in from Franklin County for $2. That's what they pay, $2 for the student to come in. And anyone outside of that county pay a higher price. We also have a scholarship program for Central City. So when we talked about long ago, you know, a year and a half ago, when we talked about having a facility downtown, I want to reassure all of the voters in Franklin County, we're downtown. We're just working with our partners at COSI, the Franklin Park Conservatory, libraries. We're doing things and doing outreach programs for everyone.
If you have a question or comment for my guest, Tom Stolfe, he's president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. They have a renewal levy on the ballot on November 3rd. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What will this levy get voters if it's approved? Is it just going to be sort of a maintenance? They won't see anything new because of it?
Oh, no. That's the thing that I love about the Columbus Zoo. We just received an national award from the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, top honors for Heart of Africa. If you've had an opportunity to see Heart of Africa, that's the future of zoos. Unobstructed views, telling stories, having mixed species exhibits, and being able to highlight conservation success. That's what it's all about, and that's what we'll do in the next 10 years. What we're doing is investing in things that are older. Let me give you some examples. Mm-hmm. In no particular order, the North American section of our zoo was built in 1984. Now, it's great for our animals, but we want to be able to give the animals that we have a little bit more room and give the guest a better experience, like Heart of Africa. Mm-hmm. It's all about immersion, getting people to explore, be closer to nature. Learn about these amazing animals. So we would invest in North America. One of the most important things for us is animal welfare. And we need to expand, not totally remove, but just expand our animal hospital. It was built 25 years ago. We had 3,000 animals. We have 10,000 animals now. So we need to invest in that area. I think one of the most attractive, most popular animals at the Columbus Zoo has to be Colo. And Colo was first born in a zoo. Yes, our gorilla. And we'll be celebrating her 59th birthday. That makes her the oldest gorilla in the world. And so when we talk about our gorilla program, we have the best. And we want to invest in that great ape area. So not just gorillas, but our bonobos and our orangutans. A part of their building was built in 1950. And so what we're looking is to do a remodel and an expansion and also give our guests unobstructed views of the gorillas and just get people an opportunity to learn about all these beautiful animals. So That's what it's all about. But we also have something new that we want to do. As we look at the zoo, as soon as you enter into the zoo, we have an area called Jungle Jack's Landing. And that area is really more of amusement rides and things. And that's fun. And we don't want them to all go away. But we also feel like there should be more of an animal factor, an opportunity to explore and the wild world. So we're talking about sea lions and seals, an area for our animal ambassador program. The last time I was on your show, I brought many animals, and they travel all over Columbus. And it's important that we get people very close. And, you know, it's all about our mission, lead and inspire by connecting people and wildlife. And we want to do that right at the front of our front door. And it's exciting and new.
When you talk about the animal hospital, that's animal hospital for the zoo.
That's
and you're saying when it was built, you had 3,000 animals at the zoo. Now you have 10,000 animals. What in the world are you doing with all? I mean, are you overflowing?
Well, no.
How's the hospital working now?
And it's doing fine. We have the best veterinarian staff. Our staff, you know, animal welfare is our top priority. No question about it. But as you see, we're expanding, and we want to expanding not within out of our borders. This levy is not about growing the zoo. It's about keeping the zoo great and doing that with no increase in tax. So when we look at our animal collection and we're looking at ways that we can care for them, we feel that we need to expand our x-ray room. We need a new exam room. And, you know, it's important that we have the proper facility. We have a good facility now, but we need to just, you know, improve it, make sure it's up to the times.
Noah in Marysville, you're on the air. Hi, Noah.
Hey, no, I was just calling to say I'm listening to your program right now, and I just find it ridiculous that this is even a debate. I mean, this is the zoo. This is the Columbus Zoo of all zoos. And me and my kids go there 20 to 30 times a year, and it's just awesome. I mean, the stuff my kids learn and see and love, and Stingray Bay, That's got to be about the best.
It's all about connecting.
My son has been stung by a stingray, just so you know, and he still goes there. He feeds them with no hesitation or anything. He loves it.
And he wasn't stung at the Columbus Zoo. He was probably
stung. No, he was not. We were in Florida. He got hit in the ankle, and I actually had to pull it out with my teeth and a pair of pliers.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Noah, let me ask you this, because other people have brought up not just Delaware, but also Union County. I mean, there's a huge growing population out in Union County that obviously is very close to the zoo and enjoys it as much. What if they did expand the tax base for the zoo someday in the future?
Well, from what I just heard, I think I pay $29 a year. Mm-hmm. I'd pay $100 a year just to make sure that the zoo stays there, because at the rate this earth is going, I want my grandkids and my great grandkids to be able to see these animals and realize just what there was in this world or what there is in this world. And I mean, it's just awesome. $20, I can stop at a gas station on a road trip and blow $20 on a pack of gum and a couple pops. So $20 is nothing. I mean,
okay.
Really.
All right. Well, Noah, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, it's very valuable to hear our guests, people coming into the zoo. Last night or Friday night, I was walking through the zoo during Boo at the Zoo. And, you know, we have different opportunities for people to, you know, dress up and have fun. But we also want to promote all of our conservation messaging. And there's no question about it. When we talk about the Columbus Zoo bringing in the millions of people, $220 million in revenue every single year is what this economic engine is. So it's not just about the education and the fun. It's also about employment. We employ 2,200 employees, and then we also have contractors around the entire Columbus area that's helping us. So, you know, we don't take it for granted. We realize that we're asking the voters to vote yes on issue 15. We want to educate them about the essential part of the zoo, and that is making sure that we educate and inspire people every single day and keep it affordable and make sure that everyone realizes that the zoo is for all.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Tom Stolf. He's president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. There's a renewal levy on the ballot. Check it out when you go to vote. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.